Penguin Random House Audio presents Thrice the Brinded Cat Hath Mewed, a Flavia Deluce novel by Alan Bradley, read for you by Jane Entwistle. Thrice the brinded cat hath mewed, thrice and once the hedge pig whined. Harpier cries, "'Tis time, 'tis time." Round about the cauldron go, in the poisoned entrails throw. Toad, that under cold stone, days and nights hast 31, sweltered venom sleeping got, boil thou first i' the charmed pot. Double, double, toil and trouble, fire burn and cauldron bubble. Fillet of a fenny snake, in the cauldron boil and bake, eye of newt and toe of frog, wool of bat and tongue of dog, adder's fork and blind worm's sting, lizard's leg and howlet's wing. For a charm of powerful trouble, like a hell broth boil and bubble. Double, double, toil and trouble, fire burn and cauldron bubble. William Shakespeare, Macbeth, Act 4, Scene 1. Chapter 1. The winter rain slashes at my face like icy razor blades, but I don't care. I dig my chin deep into the collar of my Macintosh, put my head down and push on against the buffeting of the furious wind. I am cycling madly towards the village of Bishop's Lacey, fleeing hordes of hell's hobgoblins. The past 24 hours have been a nightmare. All I can think about is getting away from Buckshaw. Gladys's wheels groan horribly beneath us. The biting cold has penetrated her steel bones and seized the tendons of her brake cables. She judders wickedly on the slick tarmac, threatening to skid off the road entirely and pitch me into the icy ditch. I want to scream into the wind, but I don't. One of us, at least, must keep her wits about her. I try to put my thoughts in order. In spite of having been banished to Canada and then re-banished back home from Miss Bodicote's Female Academy, in what may or may not have been double disgrace, I have to admit that I had been looking forward to being reunited with my family. Father, my two elder sisters, Feely and Daffy, our cook and housekeeper, Mrs. Mullet, and most of all, Dogger, Father's general factotum and all-round right-hand man. As every traveller does on an Atlantic crossing, I had daydreamed about my return to England. Father, Feely and Daffy would be at the docks to greet me, of course, and perhaps even Aunt Felicity would put in an appearance. "Welcome home, Flavia," banners would be waved, a few discreet balloons and all that sort of thing. Discreet, of course, because, like myself, none of us Deluces wear our hearts on our sleeves. But when the ship berthed finally at Southampton, there had been only Dogger standing motionless in the rain beneath a dark umbrella. With the strangeness that comes of separation, I had offered him my hand rather than giving him the crushing bear hug that was in my heart. I regretted this at once, but it was too late. The moment had passed, and the opportunity was wasted.
"I'm afraid I must be the bearer of rather bad news, Miss Flavia," Dogger had said. "Colonel Deluce has been taken ill. He is in hospital with pneumonia."
"Father, in hospital? In Hindley?"
"I'm afraid so."
"We must go to him at once," I said. "What time will we be there?"
We still had a long journey ahead of us, Dogger explained. The 5:20 boat train from Southampton would take us up to London and to Waterloo Station, where, just after 7 in the evening, we would have to change to a taxicab for a dash across the city to another train at another station. We would not reach Doddingsley until late in the evening, and would not arrive at Bishop's Lacey, Hindley, and the hospital until even later. By then, visiting hours would be long over.
"Surely Dr. Darby," I said.
But Dogger gave his head a sad shake, and it was not until that moment that I realized how grave Father's situation must be.
Dogger was not the kind of person who would tell you that everything would be all right when he knew perfectly well that it would not.
His silence said everything. Although there had been so much to say, we had spoken little in the train. Each of us had stared out blank-faced through the rain-streaked glass at a rushing landscape that seemed in the gathering twilight to be the colour of old bruises. From time to time I glanced at Dogger, but found that I could no longer decipher his face. Dogger had suffered horribly with Father in a Japanese prison camp during the war, and still, from time to time, experienced flashbacks of such terrifying intensity that they left him little more than a weak, whimpering child. Once I had asked him how he and Father had survived.
"One tries to keep a stiff upper lip mentally," he had said.
I had worried about Dogger almost constantly during my absence, but in writing, although missing me, he had seemed to be otherwise well enough. Dogger's had been the only letter I'd received from home during my incarceration in Canada, which tells you pretty much all you need to know about the warmth of the Deluce family. Oh, of course, there had been that sarcastic footnote by my newly discovered cousin, Undine, who had been dumped by fate and her mother's horrible death on the doorstep at Buckshaw. Undine's place in the family remained to be seen, but I didn't hold out much hope for her. Because she was still a child, whereas I was 12, and much more knowledgeable about the ways of the world, I wasn't particularly looking forward to renewing our brief acquaintance. But if I found, when I got home, that she'd been pawing my belongings while I was away in Canada, there would be mayhem at the manor house. It had been well past dark when the train crawled at last into Doddingsley Station, where Clarence Mundy's taxicab stood waiting in the rain to take us to Buckshaw. The cold air was damp and penetrating. A yellow fog hung round the dim lights on the platform, giving them a ghastly, ghostly glow, and making me feel as if my eyes were brimming.
"Nice to see you again, miss,"
Clarence whispered, tugging at the peak of his cap as I got into the car, although he otherwise remained silent, as if I were an actress in costume and makeup, about to make my entrance at stage left, and he, the stage manager, bound to respect my role by keeping a respectable professional distance. We rode to Bishop's Lacey and Buckshaw in silence, Dogger staring fixedly ahead and me gazing desperately out through the glass as if trying to penetrate the darkness. Hardly the homecoming I had expected. Mrs. Mullet met us at the door and folded me into her arms and bosom.
"I've made you up some sandwiches," she said in a curiously rough voice. "Beef and lettuce, your favourites. Left 'em on the dresser by your bed. You'll be tired, I expect."
"Thank you, Mrs. M," I heard myself saying. "It's very thoughtful of you."
Could this be Flavia Deluce speaking?
Surely not.
In my present state of mind, slices of dead cow garnished with sprigs of the local vegetation were a particular horror and abomination. But something made me hold my tongue.
"They've all gone up to bed," Mrs. Mullet added, meaning Feely, Daffy, and presumably Undine. "It's been an uncommon hard day."
I nodded, reminded suddenly of my late-night arrival at Miss Bodicote's female academy. Dark entrances, I thought, seemed to have become a regular part of my life. Wasn't it odd that my own flesh and blood had not waited up for me? Or was I expecting too much? I had only been gone since September, but surely one of them... I stifled the thought. Surely there was someone to welcome me home. Even a stuck-out tongue from Undine would have been welcome. But no, it was far past her bedtime.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?